Support for NPR podcasts comes from HBO Films, presenting Tsunami, The Aftermath, a two-part miniseries. Part one premieres Sunday, December 10th at 8 p.m., 7 central on HBO.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Political activist and women's movement icon Gloria Steinem came out swinging decades ago as an irresistible voice for feminism and freedom as a new generation defined it. She was a beauty and a battler, founded Ms. Magazine when that was an earthquake in publishing, stood up again and again for women's rights, women's equality, women's freedom. Gloria Steinem still does all that, but at 72, she's widened her focus, too. Her latest cause, 21st century slavery and human trafficking. There's a lot of it, a shocking half-hidden world of debt bondage and sex slavery and outright servitude, and Steinem is on it. Joining me now from New York is writer, lecturer, and feminist activist Gloria Steinem. She's co-founder of Ms. Magazine, the National Women's Political Caucus, Voters for Choice, Choice USA, founding president of the Ms. Foundation for Women. Steinem is also an award-winning writer, author of a number of books, including Revolution from Within, A Book of Self-Esteem, and Outrageous Acts and Everyday Rebellions. She's co-founder with Jane Fonda of Greenstone, a new woman-controlled radio network. She's currently working on Road to the Heart, America as If Everyone Mattered. About her three decades as a feminist organizer, she's written the foreword to the new book, Enslaved, True Stories of Modern-Day Slavery. Gloria Steinem, thanks for being with us. Sounds like you're busy.
Well, thank you for that very wonderful introduction. Thank you.
It's great to have you. After all that you've fought for and continued to fight for, how did slavery and human trafficking climb onto your agenda?
Well, actually, it's always been there because any ill that affects the world at large tends to affect females more, whether it's illiteracy or poverty. And slavery or human trafficking is 80% female. Whatever is bad for women turns out to be bad for men, too, in the end. And really, you know, I was listening to the kind of kind-hearted promo, and it isn't widening the interest, it's continuing the interest, because feminism has always tried to look at the world as if everyone mattered.
Very big tent feminism here, but give us the basics. As you point out in the foreword to Enslaved, many people associate slavery with the distant past or at least kind of the Civil War, pre-Civil War past. Help us come up to speed with the basics of what you and others see out there now.
Well, it's the reason this book is very important of slave narratives is because the slave narratives, as you point out, of the past were very important in showing that slaves were indeed full human beings, not children, not animals, and that was the purpose of those narratives. Now we have another purpose, which is to show that slavery still exists and actually is much bigger in trade and much more profitable than it was in the past. Yes, it's illegal on paper in most countries, but it is very poorly enforced. Globalization has increased the mobility and of labor and the need for cheap labor. Prostitution and sex trafficking has always been enormous at all times. About 80% of all trafficked or individuals of all slaves are female for that reason. So, you know, we have the political ability to deal with this, but it's going to take a lot of pressure, just as it did take a lot of pressure to get England ultimately to use its ships to suppress the slave trade, to get our own governments and our own state governments to create laws against human trafficking and to enforce them is going to take a lot of our individual efforts. And, of course, there's much we can do besides that. Mm. That is, there are many individual things we can do.
It's funny how stories move the world, and I guess not so funny as well, 19th century slave narratives, as you remind us, Gloria Steinem, roused a lot of abolitionist feeling, and slavery eventually outlawed many places, sometimes at gunpoint in war, as here.
And here you've got, behind your foreword, a lot of stories, again, that illustrate the kind of servitude that's out there today. Can you give us some examples of the kinds of stories laid out for readers here?
Well, this book is really the result of the courage of eight people who came forward to tell their stories. And they vary from a woman from Haiti who was in servitude, a girl, an orphan in Haiti, who was in servitude there and then sold into servitude in this country, it's sometimes the servitude is domestic, sometimes it's labor. But each individual story is compelling in itself. And I must say that in addition to this book, there's going to be a very important movie that is being premiered at Sundance in January called Trade with Kevin Kline, which shows exactly how a young woman from Russia is offered a non-existent jobs, you know, taking care of children and so on, brought in through Mexico, has her passport stolen, joins a group of young women who are being enslaved as prostitutes, and also how a little 12-year-old Mexican girl is kidnapped off the streets. And this was based on a New York Times Sunday Magazine expose, this film. So I'm hoping that films like this and books like this very important one will bring this into the national discussion. We actually did in 2000 get a law passed against human trafficking in this country, so it's possible to prosecute the kingpins here, because the trade does require the rich customers and poor nations, and also to report every year. The State Department is supposed to report every year on other countries and their slave practices. But it really hasn't been enforced. We've been so distracted by real and imagined terrorists that this subject is not brought up by this government at appropriate meetings or even by the European Union.
Mm. Stories on film and stories in the book. Gloria Steinem has written the foreword for Enslaved. It's edited by Jesse Sage and Leora Kasten. Contemporary slavery stories. You quote Cesar Chavez at the outset of your foreword, Gloria Steinem, saying, "We must save the executioner from being the executioner as well as the victim from being the victim." What do you intend to light up with that quotation?
Slavery doesn't work without consumers, and the consumer has to harden his or her heart against all empathy with another human being in order to be a slaver. One of the most important things about this book is that there is the story of a young man from Mauritania who has been born into a family that are hereditary slave holders because of the multi-generational system of debt bondage there, and takes it for granted until he happens to read the words of spoken during the French Revolution, that all men have a right to be free and equal, and begins to take them to heart. And this begins a journey of his, which ends up with him being rejected by his family and forbidden to return to his own country because he has rejected its slaveholding traditions. Mm. So, you know, I think we have to understand what it does to the oppressor as well as the oppressed, and understand all of our stake in it, as whether it means being careful about the provenance of the goods that we buy to make sure if they're too good to be true in terms of how cheap they are, mm-hmm. they probably are too good to be true, and we need to make sure where we're buying our produce and where we're buying commodities of all kinds. Or whether it's being educated enough to notice that in our neighborhood there is a domestic servant who never comes out of the house by herself, is disobeyed even by the children she's supposed to be taking care of, you know, has all the signs of low status. And in this book is a place where you can refer, a hotline where you can refer these cases for investigating.
Empathy, the key to lighting all that up, to kind of x-raying the world around us. How far do you take that? When you apply full empathy to this issue of human trafficking and slavery, how far does your definition go into the sweatshops and agricultural fields that may end up on with products on American tables?
Well, it is difficult to make lines because injustice is injustice. But what's referred to as human trafficking is mainly the approximately 800,000 people who are sold over national borders every year, but also the others who are sold and imprisoned within their own countries. So the total is about 12 million, even according to the conservative estimates of the State Department. Any place there is a lack of choice, there is a problem. But slavery is really doesn't include the realistic possibility of escape. People are found chained to beds in brothels in Times Square. People are found chained or locked into sweatshops in California. What they have is bare subsistence, and their life expectancy is usually not too great, and really very limited possibility of escaping, including the fact that because we don't have, for instance, in my state of New York, we have no laws against human trafficking, it's frequently true that the police are not educated enough to know that this is not a prostitute one should jail, but a victim of human trafficking who cannot possibly say that in the presence of her captors, whose children may be captive by him. You know, we need to be able to recognize this degree of slavery.
And 80% women is the ratio Gloria Steinem puts on it.
80% women and about 50% are children.
Brigitte is calling from Boston. Brigitte, you're on the air with Gloria Steinem.
Thank you. Good day.
Good day.
And, hello.
I just want to thank Gloria for taking the time, especially with her reputation of women's causes. And I really want to say that I'm very happy that she is bringing this sad case of women to this world. I am the U.S. representative of Friends of Mighty Nepal. And Mighty Nepal, let me turn my radio down. Which everybody does. Mm. Sorry about that. I spend a lot of time in Nepal, and I just want to say that we need to talk about the sex trafficking throughout the world. It's happening in Boston. It's happening in New York.
You say sex trafficking? Is that what you see out of Nepal and elsewhere?
Yes, that's what we. That's what I'm involved in: rescue of sex trafficked young women.
Gloria Steinem, how big a part of this world does that constitute?
Well, it's part of the reason that slavery is 80% female. Of course, some little boys are also sold for sex trafficking. And it's very important that we have organizations on the ground so that children and women from Nepal are not able to be sold over the border into India and thus, into the international slave trade. And I'm very grateful that this organization exists.
Is this a growing problem even now, or do you have a sense of it having topped out? Is it meeting real resistance, or does it get kind of a brush off, the sex trade?
Well, I think it's growing because it's so profitable. There's much more likelihood of prosecution if you're selling arms or drugs. But it happens that trafficking in people is more profitable. The average profit per trafficked person is about $10,000 because the price of purchasing and maintaining a person is actually less great than dealing in arms or in drugs.
And governments more likely perhaps to go after guns because they don't know how they're going to be used.
Well, That may be part of it, though you would think they would have a certain fondness for their own citizens who are being, sold over the border. You know, I thought maybe I would read to you because you were asking me what's the definition mm-hmm. of slavery. And mm-hmm. I think the United Nations spent a very long time trying to work that out to condense it sort of like poetry here. Mm-hmm. So let me just read it to you. The recruitment, transportation, transfer, harboring or receipt of persons by means of the threat or use of force or other forms of coercion, of abduction, of fraud, of deception, of the abuse of power or of a position of vulnerability, and giving and receiving payments or benefit to achieve the consent of a person for the purpose of exploitation.
And a lot of it going on, amazingly and maybe not so amazingly, right now. Gloria Steinem says, look with empathy and you will see. Let me take a call. Gloria Steinem from Lake George, New York. Dave is on the line. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Hello. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can, Dave.
Yes.
I'm on a cell phone and I frequently get dropped, but I'm a FedEx driver up here in the lower part of the Adirondacks, New York, and I serve a lot of exclusive, really fancy customers that have estates throughout the mountains up here. And listening to the radio show has made something click in the back of my head, and I frequently come across what I would call domestic servants who can't speak English, who appear nervous, very quiet and subdued. They hide from around corners, or they come to the door because they're the only ones home. And I've always wondered if these folks are really there on their own free will.
And you're seeing them in the country homes of the rich. Gloria Steinem, there's a firsthand account.
Yes, and, you know, I thank you so much for calling from your cell phone. Your call is worth the entire program if we can lead to freeing even one person. Let me give you a referral hotline of a trafficking information service that can investigate it for you. The number is 1-888-373-7888. That's 1-888, and the number is 373-7888.
And what about the point Dave raises? As a FedEx driver, he delivers. He sees people who look to him like foreigners who can't speak good English and who look scared. So there they are on the lap of luxury, but not sharing.
You know, those are two of the signs of domestic servitude, and it needs to be carefully investigated, of course. But you know, people who seem unable to leave the house, who have no power in the household, whose demeanor is not natural. It may very well be that somebody has been brought in against their will, or told that they have to pay off an enormous debt for their airfare, which is somehow never payable off. And it's very, very important that I thank you so much for calling in, and I hope that you'll call the referral hotline and give them the addresses so they can look into it and see what's happening.
And they're not in sweatshops, but potentially in the homes of the rich. Let me take a call from Boston. Sandra is on the line. Hi, Sandra. You're on the air with Gloria Steinem.
Thanks for taking my call. Yeah. Gloria, thank you so much for bringing this to everyone's attention. I'm appalled every single time I hear, you know, stories like this. I was born and raised in Mexico City. And I saw firsthand how domestic servants who are from more the Indian races were treated in appalling ways. And I see that here in the United States as well. And just as an American citizen, I'd like to know if you can tell us how, not having money to give necessarily, but how can an American citizen get involved? How can we help? What can we do hands-on?
Well, I thank you for that. And there are so many things you can do. Actually, there's a very good list of what every citizen can do in the back of this book called Enslaved. You can support the many anti-slavery organizations. This one is the American Anti-Slavery Group. You could invite a survivor. I mean, there are enough brave survivors now of this system who are willing to come out and tell their stories in order to help others. And I can give you a number, you know, so if you belong to any civic group or church or synagogue, whatever it may be, and you would like to have a survivor speak to sensitize a larger group of people, you could call 1-800-884-0719, 884-0719, and see if you can, invite one of these, I have to say, very brave folks to come and speak to you. You can talk to others about it, and as we just saw, you know, refer cases that you find are suspect. And you can kind of design your own education campaign, depending on where you work. You know, if one of us tells five more people, and kids are doing this too, incidentally, in their classroom, designing their own education campaigns and focusing on the fact that 50% of slaves in the world are children, so they have a very personal feeling about reaching out to other children.
Mm. Sandra, thanks for your call. Gloria Steinem, these last two calls make me think about American immigration policy. It's been debated so much this year. But, people can be held in servitude because they're not legal and they're afraid of what happens if they walk out the door. Is there an intersection that you see between human trafficking, servitude, and immigration policy as it stands?
Yes, I'm so glad you said that because we hear a great deal about illegal immigration, but we don't hear about unwilling illegal immigration, people who are being brought over the border against their will. And if there were a way of questioning rather than just paying off guards. And, you know, part of the problem is that this trade is so profitable that there's plenty of cash to pay off, chiefs of state in other countries and guards and enforcement people here. So perhaps we can get some attention to this because of the attention to illegal immigration. And then you're quite right, once they're here, if they are afraid of return, though many would like to be returned or set free. But part of what we did in the law that we got passed in 2000 was to make clear that the person who was the victim of trafficking was not to be punished but was to be given support services. So if we can get that word to people who are fearful of escaping because they are illegal immigrants, if we can point out that if they have been trafficked, then they get support services, not incarceration, that would help.
Gloria Steinem writing about what she describes here as a river of human chattel that flows through factories and sweatshops, kitchens and crop picking fields, red light districts and brothel beds. Let me take another call from Boston. Maurice is on the line. Hi, Maurice. You're on the air.
How are you doing? Thank you for taking my call. I'm a first-time caller. Well, earlier you said that the person who's the enslaver has to come to a mindset that allow him or her to do what he's doing. Well, I'm from Haiti, and back home the idea we have is that when we take a child into servitude, we're actually helping the child and the parents, who are usually poor people. So what do you think about that? What do you see about
well,
that?
Well, perhaps you're speaking of the system known as Restavek in Haiti. I mean,
yes.
I think that the key to it is, as always, is free will and whether or not the parents had any alternative, whether or not the child is being allowed to go to school and being taken care of and well-nurtured or simply used as a slave. So we need to look at the content to see who is being helped and who is not.
But Maurice, did you have children in servitude working for you in this way? Did you feel as though you were a slave master?
No. Actually, I wasn't. I was young. I'm living in Boston. When I left, I was still young. So I didn't. But I actually knew people who actually had children serving them.
And this comes back to the empathy issue, Gloria Steinem. Maurice saying people just don't see it that way. They see it as helping these kids who may be from poor families.
Well, I don't think they would see it as helping if they thought of these children as their own, because they're treated very differently in these circumstances from their own children. It's interesting to read the narrative here of the young man who was a slaveholder in Mauritania, whom I've met, and who was raised to believe that the slave he had personally was his friend. He was not his friend. He had no choice.
This other boy was a gift to him, his milk brother. They had nursed at the same nursemaid's bosom as kids. And then the boy was made a gift to him as a slave at a kind of coming-of-age ceremony.
I mean, the only way one can consider that this is kindness is to be so distant from the situation of the other person that you are sort of making up ideas of how the other person would be even worse off not looking at what any human being deserves in terms of food and freedom and education and nurturing.
Let me take a call from Salem, New Hampshire. Brian is on the line. Brian, you're on the air with Gloria Steinem.
Oh, thanks for taking the call.
Yeah.
A lot of people actually would think that people staying in servitude is nuts. Anybody could walk out. But a little incident when I was a telephone repairman down in New York City.
Yeah.
I walked into a little shop that had about 20 people in a 30 by 25 foot area, all sewing machines. Mm-hmm. And I walked in because I had to go fix a phone. And every person in that room looked at me, and I said, what did I do? I was so afraid of all of a sudden being the center of attention.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy grabbed me and walked me through the room. And I still can see those faces all that time ago. And I realized later, they probably all thought I was the police or something showing up because I was the only white person in there.
Did it look mm-hmm. like servitude to you, Brian?
They were working. I could not believe how hot it was in that place, and they didn't even have a fan. It just caught me by surprise, and I still remember the faces. It had to be. They looked so scared when I walked in there that, and the circumstances of the work were just horrible. I mean, I don't know how you could work in there 10 hours a day.
The phone repairman could see it right there, Brian. You could, but, yeah. But can we?
Well, first of all, I thank you for the good heart that means this lives in your memory, and it will help you to speak out the next time. I really appreciate your calling. I think we understand things like the Stockholm syndrome better when it is a well-educated white political prisoner, but somehow when it's a sweatshop or a brothel, we say why don't they escape? Mm. Actually, in many cases, the women's, for instance, in the film trade. The woman who has come here to try to make a living has a little boy at home, and she realizes that child is a hostage once she sees what her situation is.
And we hear, again, sewing machines, it brings to mind the faces of women, as Brian describes it. I wish you'd take us further on this vein of women's issues and slavery. If it's 80% women, is there still something, after all the years of work that you and others have done, about the way the world sees women that enables not just discrimination, but slavery?
Well, actually, it wasn't really called slavery until it began to include men. When it only was thought to include women, it was called a harem, or it was called domestic service. Even the seriousness of the word slavery is probably due to the presence of men being and boys being bought and sold as well. So it just as we what we when it happens to women, it's called culture. When it happens to men, it's called politics. You know, the very definition of slavery owes something to the fact that men were suffering too, and therefore there was a greater degree of empathy. Obviously, it's wrong when it happens to anyone, male or female.
And then it's persistence, a sign of the persistence of less than success in the women's movement?
Oh, of course. Listen, it wasn't always this way. I don't want our listeners to feel discouraged because for 95% of human history, as far as we know, there was balance between males and females and between people and nature, and there were, very different systems. But in the last 5,000 to 8,000 years, which is certainly less than 5% of human history, we've had systems of male dominance mainly because of a desire to control reproduction.
Lots of listeners want to speak with you, Gloria. Let me turn to Mike in Pawtucket. Mike, you're on the air.
It's Pawcatuck.
Pawcatuck, excuse me.
Nice to talk to you. I'm really happy you're taking up this issue. I was a reporter in Russia for 2 years, and this is just infuriates me no end. It's because the sexual slavery, I mean, slavery is terrible, but for sexual purposes, I mean, it's worse than murder, because these girls supposedly die within 4 years, and I've got a radical solution for it.
What's your solution, Mike?
I think, I'm not even really being facetious, I think, they should send like undercover people, commandos, some unit, and catch these people and just slaughter them, the people in charge, because, you raise the cost of doing this to the point where they can't do it, because these girls are so sweet, and they're so beautiful, and they're so innocent, and we're talking people who can speak four languages, and they just trick them with these promises of jobs and then just, you know, rape them and destroy them and take away their passport. And supposedly they really don't live more than 4 years. It's worse than murder, what they're doing. And the police are useless. The police look at these girls as though they're trash. You know, they don't understand the global ramifications. They don't care, you know, and they're all bought off. In all these countries, they're bought off. I mean, they have these huge bordellos. Mm. Israel and Turkey, you know, and they're all with these Russian Eastern European girls, and they have no recourse. There's nothing they can do because the government is bought off, and I mean, you know, it just. But that could be stopped. That wouldn't be hard to stop.
It's trafficking. Maybe not hard. Gloria Steinem, worse than murder, bring in the commandos, says Mike.
Well, I share this caller's rage. It makes me wonder if I'm such a pacifist, too, when I look at all these stories. And one of the stories that is in this book is exactly what this caller is talking about, a young woman in Russia. You know, as always with humanity, it's not so easy to figure out the good guys from the bad guys, because some of the people who are perpetuating this are being forced to perpetuate it themselves. They started out as slaves themselves and have no choice but to become to work in the hierarchy of being pimps. So we need to understand that and look at the circumstances of each person. But also, I think it's only going to work if we stop eroticizing domination altogether. Mm. You know, because it's also true that the most frequent place that a woman is beaten and killed is in her own home by someone who she is married to or loves. So, you know, because we have got this system that tried to normalize the control of women as the means of reproduction, it's pretty far-reaching, and we need to look at it in our own lives and not perpetuate violence in order to. I really don't think in my heart that you can stop violence by being violent. You know that you. Mm. I do think that the means are the ends, not that the ends justify the means. Mm. So I think we need to look at our own lives and recourse and what we can do. Speak out, reach out to people we feel may be needful. Even if they say no, at least they may remember that somebody tried to help them and, you know, that all is not lost, even if they don't act on it at the moment. You know, there's so much that we can do individually. But what this caller does address is the demand. And that is the least addressed part of this problem. What is
that
it?
That is the customers that send, in the sex trade.
Yeah, I mean, Equality Now, which is a very good international organization with which I work, has had to struggle for years to get charges brought against a sex tour agency in Queens here in New York, which was sending customers over to purchase children and women sexually. And for a long time, the judges here were saying, well, the illegal act doesn't take place in this country, and therefore we can't do anything about it. But, of course, the solicitation took place in this country. So we really need to look deeply at the demand and see what it is that has conned men against their own self-interest into believing that domination and conquering is a normal part and a desirable part of sexuality rather than equality and cooperation. Mm. We need to sexualize equality and cooperation or eroticize it rather than domination.
I want to follow that thread up, but Mike, thank you for your call. The eroticizing of domination is fundamental. That ties us right back to the very big picture of the women's movement and feminism. I mean, if feminism succeeds, presumably that eroticizing of domination diminishes. So you've got a long arc to look back on now in your work on that front. How do you describe that progress or lack thereof?
Well, I think we have made progress. I mean, I do think that we now understand, for instance, that rape is about violence, not about sex. I think the country has absorbed that. And indeed, in most rapes, there's not even a completed sexual act at all. It has to do with getting hooked on domination and feeling that one is not really masculine somehow unless one is dominant. One needs a fix of domination.
But what about the very wide screen? I mean, we look back just at the November elections here, and we saw a lot of women elected to the Senate and House. I mean, relatively, the largest core of women ever, 16 in the Senate, 71 in the House, from both parties, women swinging votes in lots of states. Is that an indicator to you that the women's movement, that feminism is making progress? That
Yes, absolutely. No, I mean, that simply would never have happened, you know, without the women's movement. In fact, when the women's movement began, the main way you could get into high political office, indeed pretty much the only way with one exception, was to marry a guy who had that office and wait for him to die.
Mm.
Then you could maybe take over the Senate seat or something. So, you know, we've come a long way from that, and everything is an import. Everything is worthwhile. Everything is, I mean, I think the art of behaving ethically and effectively is to behave as if everything we do mattered, because we don't actually know what will have the most lasting effect.
And the pace of that change, I mean, amazingly, you're 72 now, I'm not shy about it, but that's a lot of years at the wheel. Are you satisfied with the progress? Is it more or less than you expected when you set out on this trail decades ago now, Gloria Steinem?
Well, certainly I'm not satisfied. In some ways, it's more than I would have expected, I guess, 20 or 30 or 40 years ago, because now the issues of equality all have a huge majority support in public opinion polls. And even the word feminist, for instance, which Rush Limbaugh and others have tried so hard to demonize, more women self-identify as feminists than as Republicans. Feminists have better reputations than lawyers. You know, I mean, we've come a long way in terms of consciousness, and we've made some very important inroads. But we have two results. One is that there's a backlash, and that backlash has elected Reagan and elected Bush, the backlash against equality of both race and sex. And also, we are now having, in the more difficult stage of making institutional change, consciousness change can go like wildfire. Institutional change is slower.
But let's look at some consciousness change, some more anyway. Eroticize equality. I love that idea. Let me take a call, if I may, from Somerville, Massachusetts. Patrick is on the line. Hi, Patrick. You're on the air.
Hi. Earlier, there's a caller who would call about Haiti and servitude. I'm from Haiti. I am a professor and also a journalist. Former journalist. I used to work for Frontline. The issue of servitude in Haiti. There are at least 300,000 young girls and boys as well, but primarily young girls as early as sort of as young as 8 years old, who are working from 5 o'clock in the morning sometimes until at night, and they are sleeping close to their masters. Bedside, and most of them, a lot of cases that I know of young men, their first sexual encounter is with those girls.
This is Haitian men, free Haitian men, with the very young servants or slaves.
Very,
if you will.
Very young. And right now, there's a case. There are cases in which the BBC had just reported on members of the UN force that are also using those young girls. As you know, sexual servants as well, and some of the families, you have cases where men who travel from the U.S. going to Haiti, they are finding young girls who are virgins, promising them visas and so forth because of the issue of poverty, high rate of poverty.
Patrick, what's the way to solve it? We see the poverty. You describe the problem vividly, as do others. What's the solution?
I mean, it has to be long term. Sustainable growth has to be extremely important in terms of U.S. foreign policy as well. I mean, we cannot pay lip service to so-called democracy without providing jobs, and that is jobs that are well-paid, as well as cutting down on the trade of arms to governments that are not democratic.
Patrick, we've got it. Let me put it to Gloria Steinem, if I may. There's the economic argument. Globalization, is it increasing the servitude, slavery problem? How does inequality figure in? We've looked at the sexual aspect.
Yes, no, it certainly is globalization, which as a word is not bad in itself. It depends what values are being globalized, and unfortunately they're not good values that are being spread. And the financial reward for slave labor in the ability to sell these goods everywhere for much more is just increasing the problem. And I really thank the caller for this testimony. But I think in addition to what he says, which is to remove the need, we have to look at who creates the market. Who are those UN officials and, you know, who are in Haiti, who are using children sexually? We have to punish them. We have to look at the demand, not just the supply.
But there's a kind of, I don't know how to put this, just a native cultural demand there, or traditional cultural demand that Patrick describes as well.
But that's, I mean, whether it's native or whether it comes from, it doesn't matter. You know, it is rape to have sexual assault, to have sex with a child, and to have unwelcome sex with anybody. So it is a long-term solution, as he points out, deeper, which includes economics, but goes deeper than economics, so that we raise our sons without this notion that they have to dominate in order to be masculine.
Let me go to Iowa City, Iowa, and Mary. Mary, you're on the air. Hi.
Thank you. I'm glad you have Ms. Steinman on, because I find with American women that we are, since I'm an American woman too, we are confused as to who owns our bodies. This is why we can have the Brownbacks get up and talk about anti-abortion. It's not even a point of abortion. It's the point of who owns this body. Are you, as an adult female or as a female, period, in charge of your reproductive organs and so on and so forth?
You think it's still an open question in American women's minds who owns their bodies, Mary?
Yes, this is why you got that. You can have these neoconservatives running around the country crazies, you know, and even locking women up for prostitutions if they're selling their body on their own. That's their business, I feel. So who owns this body? This is the question.
Gloria Steinem?
No, I totally agree. And, you know, sometimes people say to me, how is it that the ultra-right wing can be against abortion and for capital punishment, as if this were illogical? But in their mind, and indeed, you know, in a system of logic, it is logical, because the point is not what is done, but who does it, who has the power to do it. So if the state has the power to send somebody to the electric chair, if the state has the power to send somebody off to war, that's okay. But if the individual has the power to decide not to bear a child or to bear a child, that's not okay. It's who has the power exactly, is this, who owns who, you know, exactly as this caller points out.
Let me get one more call, if I may, from Cedar Falls, Iowa. Raul is on the line. Hi, Raul, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom, and hello, Ms. Steinem. Actually, I just had a quick suggestion to make, since I'm from India and I can tell you a little bit about the domestic help. Well, basically, not everybody who comes is exploited, but there's a large segment which I do understand is exploited, and there's a way we can actually go about reducing this proportion. What I suggest is if we can put curves at the entry point for these people who are coming in, because most of them are uneducated and they have no idea what they're getting into.
You're talking about when people are coming in, say, to the United States.
The domestic help, which you can say, actually, many of them are treated like slaves, not everybody. But
right.
Those who are treated like slaves, if we can put curves or checkpoints at the entry level itself, like the U.S. consulates in India.
To ask what? When they come into an American airport, are you here voluntarily? Do you want to
exactly.
be here?
Exactly. And we're very sure there'll be hundreds of Indian organizations in the U.S. who'll be willing to even contribute towards that effort. And it's a very good social issue even for Indian organizations, because once they're here, they're pretty much helpless.
Yep.
And if you make sure...
No, I agree, and once the domestic help is, or other laborers are working here, the question is, do they have possessions of their own passport? Because the most frequent thing that happens, in addition to violence and so on, is that their passport is taken away, so they have no choice. But to warn those people, in young women and also boys in Russia or in India, who are being told by false travel agencies that these jobs are awaiting them, you know, to just if they know what to look for in terms of false promises, if they know who to check with to see whether this is a legitimate job or not, if they know what their rights are, that helps a lot. And there are very many very brave Indian groups doing this. And we need to do it more here as well.
Raul, thanks for your call. Our time grows so short, but there's a call for to watch out at the airport. Watch out if you're the FedEx driver at the end of the driveway. And Gloria Steinem, here we are in 2006 and still ringing that bell, in a way, for freedom, the bottom line.
Yes, I think, you know, as usual, Abraham Lincoln, you know, kind of said it the most succinctly. He said, in giving freedom to the slave, we assure freedom to the freedom to be free.
Gloria Steinem.
And actually, as long as slavery exists, our freedom is in jeopardy, too.
Could do worse than quoting Honest Abe. We really appreciate your time today and the fact that you're out there working on this. Gloria Steinem, thank you very much for being with us.
I thank you very much, and I thank you for having such terrific listeners. Obviously, the people who listen to you are good folks.
They are A number one, and we love them. Gloria Steinem, thanks for being here. The new book is Enslaved, True Stories of Modern Day Slavery. Listeners, thanks for joining us this hour. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.